As you know, beloved listeners, in Palestine, in Israel, lines on a map aren't just convenient points for direction. Any map is a heavily loaded historical and political document. A week before the recent Israel election, still without an outcome, Netanyahu stood before a map of the Jordan Valley and pointed where Israel would annex it if he won the election. Perhaps a little more on that later. But now let me introduce you to Dr. Salman Abu Sitter, a Palestinian engineer who, as part of his research into the history and geography of his homeland, became a collector and expert on the maps of the region. Salman Abu Sitter is visiting Australia to give the annual Edward Said lecture, and older listeners will remember there were great days in the past when Edward would come on the program quite regularly. Salman and I are both, shall we say, elderly gentlemen, and I am delighted that he's in our Melbourne studio. Welcome to our little wireless program. Salman, you were born near the village of Beersheba, now in Israel, but before 48 in Palestine. In your book, Atlas of Palestine, the capture of Beersheba is noted as a key turning point after its takeover by Australian troops. Why is that?
My personal history with Australia is very strong, although now I am here in Australia for the first time ever. The Light Horsemen Regiment started from my land, Abu Sitta land, Al Ma'in land, on the way along Wadi Beersheba, and they turned to Beersheba from the east in an unexpected move. And they captured Beersheba 6 p.m. on Wednesday, 31st of October, 1917. So next morning, General Anembi sent a telegram of victory to London saying, "We took Beersheba." And Balfour, the foreign minister, opened his drawer and pulled out a piece of paper he already signed with Zionists some months back, and he then declared the Balfour Declaration. Of course, for us, it was a treacherous document because it was against the promise of Allied forces that if we together worked in order to defeat the Turks, Palestine will be free and independent. And instead of that, we have ushered 100 years of death and destruction for my people and for my country.
You became a refugee at the age of 10 in 1948. In what Israelis call their War of Independence. But as we've discussed previously on the program, the Palestinians call the Nakba, the catastrophe. Was it your experience as a refugee that got you interested in map making?
Well, in April 1948, I was a primary student at Beersheba School. The schoolmaster came to us, gathered us in a boarding school. He said, "Look, we have news that the Jews are killing Palestinians in Deir Yassin, and I have no way to protect you. Go back to your families." So I started with two students of my age to go back home, which was 45 kilometers away. And I had to walk this distance until I arrived home. But if I thought I was safe, then I was wrong. Because on the 14th of May, 1948, we were attacked by the Haganah in 24 armored vehicles. They attacked us at night. And we had no weapons of any kind except few rifles. And they attacked us and destroyed all our homes, destroyed the school which my father built in 1920, and they destroyed the bayara, the well, motorized well and flour mill which we have built. And so in the morning, when we were women and children, I am included, we were hiding in a ravine, watching the smoldering remains of my existence. Then in the morning, we found the dead killed during the night and the debris of our houses and so on. And on that day, 14th of May, our village has been totally destroyed by the Haganah. And on that day, two things happened. One, that Ben-Gurion told his Polish settlers that now we have the state of Israel on the land of Palestine. And the second thing is I became a refugee on that very same day.
We have a regular guest on the program, Salman, Ian Black. And he recently said this: memories and maps feature prominently in the experience of Palestinians, a people scarred by dispossession, dispersion, occupation, and profound uncertainty about their future. That's as true now as it was then.
Well, I know Ian Black, he tries to write what's called balanced view, but there is nothing like my experience, because I am the victim of a Nakba. A Nakba is the largest ethnic cleansing in the history of Palestine. Imagine that the population of 560 cities, towns, and villages in Palestine have been totally depopulated and made into refugees. There is nothing like it in history. Not only have been made into refugees and our property has been taken away from us, now called Israel, illegally, of course, but also our traces, our history has been obliterated. Our geography has been expropriated and renamed in different names. And the mention of Palestine and Palestinians is considered to be taboo. And that is the age in which we live in, the internet and the telephones and radios and so on. We are not talking about Roman times or things like that. When I went to England, if I just digress a little bit, I was doing my PhD at the University of London in the 1960s. And I wanted to know about Palestine. Of course, Britain has run away, fled from Palestine in a disgraceful manner only 10 years earlier. So I went to Royal Geographical Society and British Archives and so on, Kew Gardens, and I asked for documents about Palestine. He said, "What? There is no Palestine." I said, "Look, what do you mean no Palestine? You just left Palestine." And said, "Look, where is the map? I'll show them." And they said, "This is where Palestine." And they said, "Ah, this is Israel." And then I found all names mentioning Palestine has been erased and replaced by the word Israel. So I took it upon my task to document everything I find about Palestine. There are so many organizations in England which has something to do with Palestine. But I went to Paris also, in the National Library. I went to Munich. I went to Berlin. I went to Istanbul. I went to New York Library of the United Nations Library. I went to Library of Congress. And over the course of 20 or 30 years, I collected as much documents I can about Palestine. And then I created, through 20 years of rigorous research, the Atlas of Palestine from 1917 to 1966. And in that atlas, we only restate the fact and the history which had been obliterated by Zionists. And we have listed 1,600 towns and villages. We have listed in the atlas 34,000 historical and holy sites in Palestine. We have listed 55,000 place names created by Palestinians about their fields, about their places and villages and so on. So this record has been resurrected. Of course, it's not only a record, it's in the minds of people who have been deprived from their patrimony. Now we are 13 million people. Half of them are in the soil of Palestine, and the other half are within a band around Palestine waiting to return home. There are 13 million people. In the year 2030, will be 18 million people. We are not going to go away. Our right to return home is sacrosanct. It is actually embedded in the international law without any exception. And the young people today in Gaza, for example, they are protesting every Friday at the barbed wire separating them from their land, saying, "We want to return home, we want to return home." And that will be the principle which no child today or older person like me will give up. to return home.
Passionate words from my guest, Salman Abu Sitter, who's visiting Australia to give the this year's Edward Said lecture, and he's in our Melbourne studio. Salman, one of the things I find interesting is that maritime boundaries are becoming more significant. I believe there's a long-running dispute between Lebanon and Israel about the ownership of gas resources off their coastlines.
Philip, the problem goes much back before that. Israel has no borders. Neither by its own admission, it never admitted it has any borders, nor international law. The what's called the limits of Israel, which it occupied in 1948, is bounded by something called armistice lines. The armistice lines agreement, signed in 1945, says in Article 2 very clearly that this armistice line does not give any rights for the occupying force to claim ownership or even sovereignty of the land it occupied. It simply is the line when the attacking forces of Zionism took over part of Palestine, most part, 80%. So Israel has no borders. Actually, under international law and an armistice agreement, Israel has no ownership of the land taken over, the land Palestinians taken over. And if you look at the actual ownership of Israeli Jews, they were not called Israelis then, they were just Jewish settlers in Palestine, they did not exceed 6%. And in 1948, Israeli invasion took over 80% of Palestine. The difference between these two numbers means that Israel has occupied that part under no principle of law whatsoever, only by brute military force. Even the Israeli law today never says that this land is owned by Israel. It's only run by Israel Land Administration. It is rented to the kibbutz on a lease of 99 years, but its ownership still is vested with the original Palestinian owners. Even the United Nations, every year in their annual meetings in November and December of each year, they actually have a resolution each year telling Israel, look, all the revenues from the Palestinian land which you have taken must be kept in record and must be returned to the Palestinians when they return home. So Israel does not have borders. Israel does not own the land it was established today, except by force, which is not recognized in international law. And therefore, neither the land on which Israel is based, nor the revenue of this land, nor of its shores, nor of any gas in front of the shores of Palestine, belongs to Israel. It's only taking over by force.
Let us end our conversation where it began, with the observation that Netanyahu campaigned with the promise to formally annex the Jordan Valley. How would that affect the rest of the West Bank?
Well, as you know, the International Justice Court of Justice in 2004 declared clearly by a majority of judges that the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza is illegal, and it has to be undone completely, that Israel has no jurisdiction whatsoever in occupying the West Bank and Gaza. And therefore, any action by Netanyahu or any of the Israeli leaders is against international law. If there was justice which is applied, in other words, if international law is implemented by force, as was done in many cases, like in Iraq or other places, then Israel has to withdraw from that. And they have no right under international law. So the Israeli politicians know that they can do all kinds of crimes against international law with impunity. Now we need to wait till the Western world, especially United States in front, to take a stand and say this world cannot be run by criminal actions against international law, it should be run by the United Nations Code.
Dr. Salman Abu Sitter, Palestinian author, scholar, and commentator who, as I said earlier, is visiting Australia to give the annual Edward Said Memorial Lecture. And I'm holding in my hand his Atlas of Palestine, 1917 to 1966, a truly fascinating volume. Thanks, Salman.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much, Philip, for having me. Thank you.